And the award goes to Millennial at the Movies. Welcome to Millennial at the Movies, a podcast review of the good, the bad, and the ugly Oscar-winning movies. Grab a bucket of popcorn and enjoy.
In the last episode, we talked about a quality silent film, Wings. Later in 1927, a little movie known as The Jazz Singer came out in theaters, and people were treated to a specialty, well, not the blackface part, but a talking picture. The studios were frantic that movies had sound, and the silent film era gradually died. Fast forward to 1929, where the film industry is rapidly changing. How do we keep the melodramatic tone of silent film while blending in sound? Let's make a musical! Enter today's movie. That's the program. This film is the first Best Picture winner to come from MGM Studios, who would become an unstoppable force for musicals. It's a grand achievement for 1929. It's entertaining for 1929. It's a great movie for 1929. You catch my drift? On to the review. Like usual, there's gonna be spoilers, so be prepared. The Broadway Melody is a 1929 musical, the first musical released from MGM Studios. The film is directed by Harry Beaumont and stars Charles King, Anita Page, and Bessie Love. One thing you'll notice instantly from the title card is that this movie is going to be like a silent film acting as a talking picture. We're at an awkward transition period, folks. You'll need lots of patience not to nitpick Broadway Melody. I didn't have that patience, or else this review would not exist. The film begins with a central New York busy street shot, then cuts to a music studio with dozens of acts rehearsing their songs. It eventually turns into white noise, but the scene does do a good job of setting up the mood. It's a very 1920s hokey atmosphere kind of a mood, but it's an attitude nonetheless. We then see one of our main characters, Eddie, played by King, pitch his new song, The Broadway Melody. Too bad the audio is not very good. Can't exactly understand what he's saying. Here's the biggest problem of the film. The audio channels are awful, and although I fault the movie for this, it's also a product of the times. The film clings on to silent film tropes while trying to include sound, and anyone can catch on to this. And you could tell that with a talking picture, if it's still trying to act like a silent film, it's gonna come off disjointed. You can already tell there's problems with this film. So Eddie saves the song for the Mahoney sisters, our main characters Queenie and Hank, played by Paige and Love. We find the sisters in a New York motel room. This is told to us thanks to a silent film setting card and an awkward scene cut. There's gonna be a lot of those. Be prepared, you guys. It's the usual cliche of two small town girls trying to make it on Broadway, along with the unintentional lesbian innuendos between the sisters. Yeah, this is our second movie in the series where we have these unintentional lesbian innuendos. In all seriousness, this was just how people showed affection back then. It's okay. But we're also in the 1920s going into the 21st century, so we're gonna have different attitudes. Yay, millennials! Anyway, we're 15 minutes into this movie, and Eddie comes in to perform the same song performed in the same way. Oh, yes. This film is increasingly repetitive as hell. After the song ends, finally, we see some stellar shots as the camera lingers on the sisters staring at each other for about 20 seconds while they're getting undressed. Because that's what I want to see in a visual medium. Pure silence as they stare at each other. Eventually, the actresses look around like they don't know what their next take is, so screw the product at the time, this is just a simple editing mistake. Well, Eddie takes the sisters to his main boss, Francis Zanfield, a take on Broadway tycoon Flo Ziegfeld, who will actually show up later in the series, so stay tuned for that. But anyway, the sisters perform their act for Francis, and a blonde woman who will be Hank's nemesis, and spoiler alert, traveling buddy, I'll connect that at the end. So this blonde woman sabotages their act by pushing Hank's person to the piano. To be honest, the number was destroyed already by Paige not singing in key with Love and dancing out of sync, but details, details. The song is too slow according to Zanfield. He's right, but I mean, who cares about quality? Because while Hank and the blonde fight over sabotaging Hank's number, Zanfield offers Queenie a part in his play, and I promise you it's for her looks, it's not for actually any talent. But Queenie will beg Zanfield to keep Hank, you know, the actual talent, in the act, which he agrees, because Queenie's beautiful and she needs to get whatever she wants. Queenie runs back to Hank and tells her the good news, saying it was Hank's business skill that Zanfield liked. Again, it's actually Queenie's looks. We then see Eddie, Hank's boyfriend, by the way, just clarifying, it's Hank's boyfriend, not Queenie's. Hank's. Eddie is falling more and more in love with Queenie for her looks, again. But no, it's her sweet personality and devotion to Hank that Eddie likes, even though Eddie's taken by Hank. Eddie's kind of a piece of crap in this film. Also seen being a piece of crap by arguing with the conductor about the kind of music to play and still sings the same song off the beat. Screw your Broadway melody, your song is awful. Let the person who actually knows about music, the conductor, conduct the music. Well, before I get too mad, let's get back to the plot of the sisters. So Queenie gets a part in a musical number about, I think, mermaids? It's not very clear because all she does is kind of just stand and point. Anyway, she gets the part because a girl falls off a set prop from about 20 feet, maybe. Queenie takes this girl's place. Queenie's role is standing on the set drop, point with her right arm like she's Hitler, and just look pretty. To be fair, she's very good at it, so of course everyone's captivated by her. Everyone treats this as the best thing in the world. Oh my god, give her the Oscar now. She deserves every bit of praise. One of Queenie's new fans is Jacques Warner. Again, an obvious stab at Warner Brothers film executive Jack L. Warner. So creative movie. Jacques tries to seduce Queenie, and she clearly doesn't know any better. Hank gets pissed that Queenie is building her career on the only thing she's good at. Showing off her looks. Hank does have a rare funny line when Eddie asks her how Broadway is amazing. Hank replies, yeah, Broadway. Do you like my Brooklyn accent? Do you? Do you guys? Do you? Do you? Do you? No, you shouldn't. It's pretty bad. Anyway, a few weeks pass and Queenie is getting very close to Jacques. Diamonds and expensive flowers really help out in this case. Jacques sounds more and more like a rapist every day. I haven't lost her yet. She will be mine eventually, even though she continuously rejects me because she just doesn't know any better. She's going to be mine. Anyway, Jacques is very creepy. But when Hank and Eddie try to warn Queenie about her new creepy boyfriend, she acts really mad. She acts very, very mad. I promise you, she's really mad. She doesn't sound like a whiny little brat. She's just really mad. So, I'm never convinced that she's actually showing emotion because she just sounds the same throughout the movie. Anita Paige is just awful in this movie. I haven't seen any other movies that feature her, so I can't necessarily say she's a bad actress. But if this is the only movie I've seen of hers, it's a pretty good testament to how much of an actress I can take her as. And honestly, I can't. It also doesn't help that Eddie is confessing his love for Queenie by singing, what do you know, a different song from Broadway Melody. What? Oh my god, we get a different song? We're only like 45 minutes into the movie? Amazing. I thought this was a musical, you know, with more than a couple songs. No, this musical has about three songs, maybe? No, four. Take that back, four. There's the Broadway Melody, You Were Meant for Me, which modern audiences might recognize from the 1951 film Singing in the Rain, a movie I'd much rather be watching. There's a musical number called Wedding at the Painted Doll that's actually pretty okay compared to the crap that's in this movie. And then in the beginning credits, George M. Cohan's Give My Regards to Broadway plays in the intro, which again is also featured in another film, Yankee Doodle Dandy, another movie I'd much rather be watching than Broadway Melody. Anyway, back to the plot. Eddie singing You Were Meant for Me to Queenie while still committed to Hank. Infidelity. So we're about the hour mark into this movie and the audio is still awful. No improvement there. But in terms of the plot, Hank and Eddie are talking, and it's so obvious Eddie isn't interested in her anymore. Hank, being the only decent person in the film, feels like her life is falling apart, but is happy she still has Eddie. Oh shoot, dramatic irony, everybody. Queenie, on the other hand, is spending a lot of time with Jacques because of his money. I mean, charm. He has charm. And money. He throws her this high-class birthday party with all his money, with an orchestra that literally plays the two songs sung in the movie. Did I mention I really hate the repetitiveness of this movie? Because I do. No, this is literally how the scene goes. They're playing, what is it, You Are Meant for Me, which Jacques is dedicating to Queenie. And Queenie's like, I hate this song, I hate this song, play another song. So Jacques's like, okay, honey, Broadway Melody. And I nearly screamed because I had enough of the repetitiveness. I'm not kidding. Yeah, I have very little patience with this movie. Anyway, speaking of very little patience, Jacques continues to invade Queenie's personal space as she's drunk. Well, I don't know if she's drunk. I can't tell because her drunk acting is the same as her regular acting. So she sounds drunk throughout the entire movie. I can't tell. But this is the part where Queenie is supposed to reflect on why she's with Jacques. Because she's trying to avoid her feelings for Eddie. Why? Why? Because that's just how the plot happens. Go with it, everybody. After an awkward 10-second close-up of Queenie's diamond bracelet Jacques gives her, we get the point, movie. We like looking at materialist things and you don't know how to edit properly. We get it. We get another poor cut to another boring musical number. This is where Wedding at the Painted Doll comes in. It's pretty boring, but compared to the rest of the movie, it's actually pretty okay. Anyway, after an uninterrupted 15-minute snooze fest, I think I actually did fall asleep during this part. Yeah, I can't even remember because the movie's just that forgettable. We cut back to Hank, Eddie, and Queenie arguing about Jacques. Hank, again with Bessie Love being the only one with good acting, is the only one that seems engaged in what's going on. Eddie and Queenie kind of just are reading lines off of a script. Like, it wouldn't make a difference if you put the script in their hands and they read it and then took away the script, they'd read it the same way. Eddie's actions reveal everything as he rips into Queenie about her affair with Jacques, going, you deserve better, you don't deserve Jacques, Jacques is bad for you, da 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 da. Hank catches on pretty quickly that Eddie has feelings for Queenie, and she ends up crying in her dressing room while calling up to take a 30-week gig traveling across the country and performing. Performing with who? That blonde that she got in the fight with earlier in the movie. Hank's life pretty much sucks, but it's a reality she has to face. And the sisters' relationship is already strained enough, and this is the climactic point in the movie, so this crappy movie actually does something right. I'm stunned too. I really am. But the climax of the movie, which is Hank's breakdown, is well done. The use of silence is appropriate, unlike the rest of the film, full of awkward pauses that could be edited out. The use of emotions well done, because Queenie isn't on the scene. And it's a competent scene. That doesn't excuse the crappiness of the movie, but I can say that the end is better than the beginning. So, round of applause, everybody. Once the movie actually gets decent, Eddie and Queenie gotta screw it up. After Jacques tries to rape Queenie, Eddie barges in and
punches
Jacques. This is also probably the worst edit in the film, but this is the one time I genuinely cracked up because the edit shows Eddie lunging for Jacques and he falls down. But the middle part, the editor must have faked his way to looking like Eddie punched him. I laughed way too hard. You just gotta see it to believe it. But out of the blue, again, another cut that doesn't explain anything. Eddie and Queenie are married now. And they show up at Hank's place right before she's about to leave for her 30-week trip. and they're pretty much rubbing in the fact that they're married. Yeah, no, this is very awkward. Very tense scene, I promise you. Okay, there's not actually emotion conveyed between Eddie and Queenie, but just pretend that the scene is awkward and tense, because this kind of situation, if it happened to anyone, would be painfully awkward. Queenie retires from Broadway and decides to sit around and do nothing as Eddie's wife, while Hank actually tries to make a career out of herself. Oddly enough, the ending is ambiguous. Eddie and Queenie don't look that happy when talking about their honeymoon. Hank seems dissatisfied about talking about her next adventure. Well, if there's one thing I know for sure, I wasn't pleased sitting through this movie. So the movie ends as Hank and the blonde roam off, argue, basically insinuating that Hank's gonna have a terrible time, but she's doing what she loves, so let's hope she's successful, because Hank is the only good character in this movie that I cared about. The end. The Broadway Melody lasts 1 hour 40 minutes, and it feels longer than Wings, which is about 2.5 hours. Movies should not be like that. But I think the movie honestly would be better if it were in color, mainly to showcase the elaborate musical numbers. Fun fact though, this movie was kind of in color. There is a silent film version with a two-color Technicolor scene of the Wedding with a Painted Doll number. And the reason they made a silent film version is because not a lot of the major motion picture theaters had sound equipment yet, so if you're gonna make that money, you gotta have a silent film version. So, the silent film version, is lost now, and I think I would have preferred seeing that movie because it is shot exactly like a silent film. The sound honestly did not add anything, but the only one we have now is this restored black and white all sound version. I'm really sorry. The film's only Oscar win was for Best Picture, but Bessie Love and Harry Belmont were nominated for Best Actress and Best Director. As I said before, audiences loved this movie in 1929. While it's an essential film for the musical genre, it's too melodramatic and cliche for today's audiences. I give it a 4 out of 10, because it's barely a movie. Honestly, only watch this movie if you're really interested in musicals from this time, and the transition period of silent to sound is kind of intriguing to look at from that perspective, but otherwise, skip it. Next episode, we're going to be focusing on the second war film to win Best Picture, 1930's All Quiet on the Western Front.
That concludes tonight's episode of Millennial at the Movies. Catch us next time at the movies, because remember,
there's no place like home.